Isle of Man Film, UK Film Council, and Screen Yorkshire present a Steel Mill Pictures production, a Paul Andrew Williams film, a silvery moon shines brightly in a night sky. A moth flutters by, its wings glistening in the moonlight. Below, a black car speeds along a thin country lane. Only its lights can be seen as it twists and turns around the bends. Andy Serkis, Reese Shearsmith, Steve O'Donnell and Jennifer Ellison. Doug Bradley, Simon Schatzberger, Logan Wong, Jonathan Chan Pensley, with Dave Lugino in... One by one, letters appear on the screen to spell out The Cottage in thick white capitals. Blood drips over the letters, turning them red. The car pulls up at a white cottage. A shadowy figure goes in through the front door, stepping into a dark kitchen, lit only by the moonlight streaming in from the window. The figure flicks open a Zippo lighter. Outside, a nervous-looking balding man in his 30s opens the car door on the passenger side. He hesitates for a moment, then with a sigh, gets out. His eyes nervously try to seek out the origin of the noise, then he scuttles towards the cottage. Inside, the shadowy figure holds the lighter to a coin-operated electricity meter and pops some money in. The lights come on. The balding man enters the kitchen. His companion ignores him as he roots around in the oven. The balding man, Peter, who has an open face and meek brown eyes, slumps down uneasily at the kitchen table with his back to the other man. Peter takes out a cigarette, taps one end on the cigarette box, lights it with a Zippo lighter, then snaps the lighter shut. He hands the lit cigarette to his mate, then repeats the ritual, but this time smoking the cigarette himself. The other man, David, is also in his 30s. He has closely cropped dark hair, sharp features and grisly stubble. He wears a black leather jacket and dark clothes. Peter.
We're going to go to hell for this.
Shut up.
It's freezing in here.
Jump up and down a bit.
You know how temperature sensitive I am, David.
Peter gets up from his seat and looks out of the kitchen window forlornly. David ignores him and grabs a mug from a selection hanging above the sink.
You know, in actual driven miles, I think this is the furthest away I've been from Rebecca since we got married.
I'm sure she'll survive.
Yeah, well, I don't feel comfortable lying to her like this. Now you're used to a...
David's filling up a kettle. Peter rolls his eyes as he waits for him to finish.
I know you're used to a world of deception. Our relationship relies on a bond of trust.
Do you want some tea?
Yes, please.
You get the milk from the car. How many sugars?
George, how often you've made me tea.
Give it a rest. You're doing my head in.
I'm just pointing out facts, David.
Just get the milk from the car, please.
Peter relents and goes. Outside, he shivers a little as he walks towards the car. Something rustles in the bushes beside him. Perturbed, he eyes the bushes for a moment, then gets the keys and starts to open the car boot. David slams it shut.
Christ, what are you doing frightening me?
Aren't you forgetting something?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm not used to this, am I?
How many times do I have to fucking tell you?
David goes back into the cottage. Peter walks round to the passenger door and grabs something from the passenger seat. As he walks back round to the boot, he pulls a black balaclava over his head and opens the car boot. Carefully, he reaches in for a white plastic bag. Right by the bag, a blonde young woman lies motionless with a gag over her mouth. He closes the boot. A short while later, he's sipping tea from a white mug with I Heart Tea on it.
Is she all right?
Still unconscious.
There's chloroform for you.
Well, it's freezing out there, so if I may make a suggestion, I think we should bring her in so she doesn't die of pneumonia.
Look, Peter, we've just got here. I am very tired. We are not in Iceland, and she is not going to die of that. What have you put the back on for?
Because I'm cold.
Look, I don't want to talk to your eyes all night. Take it off.
You're not the boss of me.
Where the fuck are you? Please.
David glares at his mobile and tries to make another call. Peter takes off the balaclava and notices a wrist exercise on the table. He squeezes it repeatedly with a morose expression on his face. He freezes as he sees the shadow of a moth on the floor beside him. His eyes are wide in terror as he looks up to the ceiling and sees it fluttering around the light. A split second later, he's standing directly in front of David.
Get rid of it.
What?
David sees the moth.
Oh, shit, yeah, you don't like moths, do you?
Get rid of it now, I'm bloody going.
David slams his hand on it. Then strolls back to Peter.
I didn't say kill it.
What do you want me to do with it? Adopt it?
I think I'd like to ring Rebecca now. It's a good time.
Why, because you've seen a moth?
No. We like to let each other know that we're okay. That's what you do when you're in a serious relationship.
No, it's called reporting in. That's what you do when you're under a very fat thumb.
I'm not under a thumb. It's not fat either. If you must know, the reason why I'm ringing now is I know she'll be putting Amy to bed and it'll go straight to the answering machine. I don't want her asking questions. I don't like lying.
Don't be all day.
I don't remember putting a time limit on your calls.
This is my fucking phone.
Well, you always were selfish, David.
Well, where's your phone?
In my car.
Why?
Because it's my work phone. It's in my work car.
Did you forget your phone?
David falters a little.
My work phone.
Idiot.
So what did you call me?
Idiot. You are a bald idiot.
Yeah, well, I'd rather be slightly thinning than a friendless Mockney file. I cannot wait till I never have to see your...
He's on the phone.
Hi, darling. I'm just calling to check in. Everything's okay my end, apart from being really cold. Anyway, I'll try you again later on. Give baby Amy a kiss for me. Love you lots.
He turns to face David, who's staring at him.
Yes, I blew her a kiss. So?
A short while later, they approach the car boot, both wearing balaclavas. Peter looks away distractedly. David grabs him by the chin.
Listen, if she's asleep, I suggest we be as quiet as possible so we keep her that way.
The attractive blonde is still asleep. David grabs her legs and starts to pull her out.
Can I hold the legs?
He swaps with Peter and grabs her top half. The pair clumsily lift the buxom blonde out of the trunk. They stop as the bushes rustle again. A bird flies out of the bushes, stopping the men in their tracks.
I really don't like you out here, David.
Hurry up and get inside, then.
Inside, they struggle as they carry the bound and gagged blonde up a narrow stairway.
Wait. I have to have a rest.
Come on, we're only 3 steps in the top.
I'm not as strong as you, David. Okay, go on.
Reaching the top of the stairs, David tries a door. It's locked.
Fuck. See if the key's downstairs.
They prop her up against the wall and Peter holds her steady.
Don't drop her.
The blonde, who's wearing pink jogging bottoms and whose ample bosom is almost bursting out of a white, low-cut T-shirt, is limp in his arms. Through his balaclava, he stares at her breasts. Then when he looks up, she's awake and headbutts him. Hearing the commotion, David rushes upstairs. The blonde, whose hair is in plaits, is straddling Peter and headbutting him repeatedly. David pulls her off him and drags her into one of the other upstairs rooms. Peter screams as he clutches his face. He limps to the doorway and watches as David ties her to a bed. Once she's secured, David switches on a lamp, then points a warning finger at her. She freezes and he backs out of the room, locking the door behind him. Peter stumbles into the kitchen. David follows.
You're near to roll her up. What the fuck are you doing?
I think she's broken my nose.
Yeah, that is well and truly busted.
What the hell am I going to do? It really hurts.
Well, she's been concentrating then.
I bet you were looking at her tits.
I was not.
She headbutted me. Repeatedly. I've never been headbutted by anyone before in my life.
What do you have now?
Please help me. I'm in a lot of pain.
David wipes Peter's swollen nose that's oozing blood.
Whenever I'm with you, I always end up getting hurt. Every time, guaranteed.
Don't blame me, I wasn't even with you.
That's what you said about the greenhouse.
David stops cleaning Peter's face.
That was 20 fucking years ago. Right. I'm going to knock this back into place.
What, how? I don't want you to.
Shut up and hold still.
Wait, do it slowly.
Upstairs, the blonde's eyes gleam with rage as she sits by the bed. In London, a podgy man in his 30s shuffles towards a strip club. A bouncer on the door smiles at him.
Nice hair, Andrew. Just had it done.
Nice hair, Andrew.
The hostess doesn't look up from her book, and Andrew shuffles through the smoky strip club where two topless women are writhing around poles. He passes several scantily clad women who eye him coolly. Looking around, unsure of himself, Andrew rounds a corner and goes through to a private area. He walks down some steps which lead to the strippers' dressing rooms. The girls he passes are dressed in skimpy underwear and look distinctly unimpressed by him. Finally, he slows as he approaches a door that says, Office. He looks around nervously, then knocks on the door. In the harsh light of the corridor, his copper highlights clash violently with his dark brown hair. A shaven-headed man in a suit.
Andrew.
Dad asked to see me.
Nice haircut, Andrew. A lot of work's gone into that.
Keep him out there till we get the call.
The door's closed in his face. At the cottage, David's sitting with Peter at the table. Peter's stuffing tissues up his nose.
Okay, time for work. I need you to stop whining and sort yourself out.
Why?
Because you are going to have to speak to her.
To who?
To fucking... the woman upstairs.
Why?
I told you, she knows me. She comes in the club all the time. That's why it has to be you.
Oh, yes, okay. What do you want me to say?
Well, you have to say a lot of things, but more importantly, you have to sound like someone who's going to kill her if she fucks about.
I'm not going to kill her.
I never said you had to, did I? You just have to sound like someone who would if they had to.
Well, what do you want me to say then?
You have to tell her that if you get any more trouble out of her, you're going to break her fucking fingers.
I could say that easily. Why are you making such a big deal out of it?
Because you couldn't scare a child in the dark. You have to say it right. You have to bite your fucking heart.
Okay, let's go.
Just say it to me first.
Why?
Just do it. Come on.
Okay, fine. Any more trouble from you, miss, and I'll break your fingers.
Right, say it again, harder.
Any more trouble from you, miss, and I'll break your fingers. Oh, well, how should I say it then, Mick?
I need more trouble from you, you fucking bitch, I'll break your fucking fingers!
David releases his grip on Peter.
Like that.
Fine. I now understand. Any more shit from you and I'll break your bloody fingers!
That was better.
Yeah, finally. Thank you. Anything else?
Yeah. We have to let her speak to her dad. And then you're going to take the phone off her and tell him that we want the money.
100,000?
Yep.
Yeah, I remember that bit.
Yeah, I thought you might. Now, this bit's very specific, so I want you to read this bit of paper to him.
Okay.
Read it now once so that you know.
Peter sits with hand on chin and reads the scrap of paper, his eyebrows shooting up at intervals.
Got it?
Badly written.
Can you just read it without commenting on it?
Of course. Okay, I've read it.
Right. Let's make some tea.
With their balaclavas back on, they step into the upstairs room where Tracy is being kept hostage. Peter, carrying a mug of tea with the boss printed on the side, leans in close to her. and pulls off her gag.
You fucking bastards! Get my hands free and I'll cut and kill you!
David grabs her and holds a knife to her face. Peter crouches in front of her.
Now listen! If we have to go through this every time I want to speak to you, then David here will have to use his knife to teach you a lesson.
David looks stunned.
So will you be quiet now?
David releases his grip.
I'm going to pour this into your mouth for you.
Peter puts the mug to her lips and she drinks some of the tea. She fixes him with a steely gaze.
There's no sugar in this.
Oh. Sorry.
I broke your nose, didn't I?
What do you mean?
I mean, pussy, that I broke your fucking nose. With me hands tied behind me back. So what does that make you? Apart from a little pussy.
I didn't break it.
I think I fucking did.
David clicks his fingers at Peter impatiently.
Now look, you are our hostage. And if you don't give us a hard time, you will be fine and looked after. However, if you cross us, I will break your fingers. Now, I'm going to be speaking to your father, so will you please be quiet?
He takes David's mobile.
Can I speak to Arnie, please? This is you, okay? Now, it doesn't matter who I am. Yes, I'm with... No, you can speak to her in a second. No, the amount is 100,000. We would like you to put the money in a bag and give it to your son. He is to drive alone to Fleet Services on the M3 and wait next to the men's toilets. Make sure you don't send no one else. Terrible double negative, doesn't make sense. If anything goes wrong or someone is with him, your stepdaughter is a dead girl. You've got 2 hours.
He's reading the note.
Yeah, you can, yeah.
He puts the phone to Tracy's ear.
Yeah, I'm all right. From the house. Oh, they seem like a bunch of fucking morons. One of them's called David. And they're a pair of helpless cunts to jump with!
Right, you bastard! We will hurt her if you don't give us what you want! What we want!
He hangs up. Tracy glares at David.
Big mistake. No one has ever hit me in the whole of my fucking life. You don't know who my father is, do you? Do you know what he'll do to you? And David, dear, when he finds out who you are? Every member of your queer boy family will be in wheelchairs for the rest of the fucking lives. Because they'll have no knees left. Because me dad will cut them out with an axe!
David puts her gag back on and the pair quickly leave the room. Downstairs, David angrily stabs his knife into a dresser and snatches off his balaclava.
You're a fucking moron.
Why? I said what you wanted me to, didn't I?
Because, moron, the reason I got you to talk in the first place was because I didn't want anyone to know it was me who was keeping a fucking hostage. Now that plan falls to shit if you start using my name.
Oh, did I use your name?
Yes, you fucking did.
Oh, well, sorry, I didn't mean to. It's hard to concentrate when you're having your life threatened.
It was the first fucking thing you said.
Oh, well, you're never satisfied, are you, David? You turn up out of the blue, begging for my help to get involved in something that's completely illegal.
You're not doing this out of charity, you self-righteous fuck.
I know, I want that house and I want you out of it.
I'm going to take my house and I will make you fucking eat it.
What the hell's going on, David? It's dark.
Fucking relax, the meter's run out. I've only just put money in.
This is ridiculous. What kind of a place still has a meter?
David feels around for the meter, then puts some money in.
Right. Let's see how long this lasts.
Back at the strip club, Andrew's still waiting outside the office door. It opens and the shaven-headed guy comes out again.
In you go, Andrew. Seems like some idiots have made a mistake of kidnapping your stepsister.
Son, I've got a job for you.
The voice is coming from an unseen person inside the office. The door reopens and Andrew steps out carrying a black holdall. The shaven-headed guy watches him leave, then makes a call on his mobile.
He's leaving now.
Andrew's in a car speeding along a narrow country road. He dials a number on his mobile.
Hello? David? Yes. I'm very near. Yes, I've got the bag next to me. Hang on. Look, David, I think this phone's going to die on me any second.
He checks the display on his phone and sighs as he speeds on along the dark road. Unbeknownst to him, another car is following a short distance behind. Inside the second car are two henchmen, Muk Lee San, who is driving, and Chun Yo Fu, who is sharpening an ivory-handled T-shaped knife with points at both ends. Andrew arrives at the cottage. Clutching the bag, he knocks on the front door. The henchmen pull up on a woodland road. Muk Lee San rolls down his window and peers up at the two-story cottage through a pair of binoculars. Inside, David and Peter go over to Andrew.
I am fucking rich!
Tracy listens upstairs as they huddle around the bag.
I didn't know you had a brother.
No, nobody does. That's why I used him.
Hello.
Hello.
Listen, I brought these to celebrate.
Peter, brother, dearest, this is it. I own £50,000 and Mum's house is all yours.
Oh, my God, you made it work, David. You bloody did it.
Yeah, we did it.
£50,000, I'll be free. I'll never have to live in East Sheen again. I'll have my own independence.
What does it look like?
I don't know. I didn't look inside.
What?
I didn't check it.
The others watch as David grabs the bag and pulls the zip open. They all peer into it. Outside, the henchmen hear the scream from their car.
Maybe the fuckface look in the bag.
Oh!
It's full of tissues. Andrew looks sheepishly at David.
Probably should have checked it.
Yes, you fucking should.
What does this mean, David?
It means that the money isn't in the fucking bag, is it, Andrew? It means that your dad probably has a good fucking idea that you are involved.
Sorry. What shall we do?
Were you followed?
By a car? I don't think so.
This changes everything.
I still want the house, David. That's the deal.
That happens when I get the money. That's the deal.
Oh, I absolutely knew it, backstabber! The minute you asked me to get involved, I should have handcuffed myself to the house, not to be trusted!
I said, when I get the money, then you could have my half of the house. I never mentioned a bag of fucking tissues!
Now this Arnie knows he could have thugs at my house, David!
He doesn't even care. He doesn't even know. He doesn't even know who the fuck you are. The only person he knows is involved is him!
You told me this would be simple. It clearly isn't. I can't believe I listened to you again and again!
Just give me 2 minutes! This has only just happened. I'll make it work, Peter.
I'll believe it when I see it. I'm going outside for a cigarette, and after that I might just bloody well go home!
He gives Andrew a dirty look as he stomps out of the cottage. Chubby Andrew shifts uncomfortably as David turns away from him, his eyes brimming with tears, a look of desperation flooding his face. Andrew swallows hard.
David? Have you got a bottle open?
You better disappear from my presence, or I'm likely to hurt you.
I'm going to take a look at Tracy.
I don't care. Just let me alone.
David quickly composes himself and turns to face Andrew.
I take it while you were being a fucking idiot, you remembered a mask.
Yes. I've got one on the way here.
Great, now get out.
With his back turned, Andrew puts the mask on, then stops. He goes over to David. His entire face can be seen in the balaclava.
David? I've picked up the wrong kind.
Get out of my fucking sight now.
Sorry.
Outside, Peter's smoking a cigarette. Muk Lee is watching him through his binoculars. Next to him, Chun Yo's on the phone.
There's some ball fuck outside.
Some ball fuck here. You recognize his ass?
Never see this mother before.
Okay. Tracy is alive. You go and see who in there. I only want to know right now.
I cut them the fuck up.
Go and look in the house. Then you can cut this fool.
A hostage in the back seat.
We don't need his ass no more.
The gagged man shakes as Muk Lee pulls out a cleaver.
You see this cleaver? when I get back. Me, you go play big time, baby. Real nice.
Carrying his cleaver, he gets out of the car and runs towards the cottage. Inside, David sits with his head resting on his hand as he looks at a crumpled photo of a boat. Peter comes in behind him.
What's that, a boat?
No, it's a lemon tree.
Peter sits beside him.
It's mine. I'm getting on it and I am fucking off away from all of this.
Ooh, a hoodlum running away from his underworld pals to get on a boat and lead a simple life. How bloody original.
Well, you want me gone, don't you? So you can live happily ever after with that fat pig of a wife of yours.
At least I have a wife, David.
Oh, so you agree she's a fat pig?
No, I bloody don't. Unlike you, I like the stability of having a partner.
Control her, just like Mum.
I couldn't help it if Mum loved me more. I know you hate me for that.
Couldn't really give a shit who she loved. She still gave me half the house.
Yeah, charity was always a weak spot.
Just stop talking for 2 seconds, will you?
Yeah, don't worry, I will. Nothing more to say. I'm smoking too much because of you.
David smokes a cigarette Peter has lit for him, whilst Peter angrily grabs his contact lens holder from his pocket, takes the lid off one of the two compartments, then carefully removes a lens. Wearing leather gloves marked with a Chinese symbol, Mook Lee is spying on them through the kitchen window. Peter gently puts his glasses on.
Ow.
The frames are old-fashioned and are too big for his face. David is unimpressed. Upstairs, Andrew's peeking at Tracy through the keyhole. She's sitting on the floor with her head slumped forward. Andrew smiles.
I can see you.
She lifts her head up as though looking for something. She looks to her left, then right, then she suddenly looks directly at the keyhole, causing Andrew to jump back. He pulls off his redundant balaclava and rushes downstairs. In the room, Tracy glares ahead with a wicked glint in her eyes. Andrew joins the others in the kitchen. Peter looks at him for a moment, then shakes his head in disbelief and looks away. David slides a piece of paper across to Peter.
Peter, I need your bank account number.
Why?
Because we're going to have to get him to do a bank transfer, aren't we?
But why can't we use your account?
Oh, I don't have one, do I? Oh, I don't use cash.
I don't have one either.
Well, why don't you have one?
Me and Rebecca share a joint account.
Yeah, but you've got a bank card, haven't you? What's the number on it?
Don't know the number. Rebecca looks after the card.
God, I should have known. Andrew, tell me, have you got a bank account?
Yes.
Great, fantastic. What's the number?
I don't know.
What are we going to do if we don't have an account?
I've got an account we can use.
Oh, great. Whose?
Mum's.
What? That is supposed to be shut down, David!
I didn't get round to it, did I? And good job, too.
You absolute fucker! You're dragging Mum into criminal activity! I won't allow it! I won't! It's as simple as that!
It's either that or no money and no house.
You're blackmailing me and you're dirtying Mum. What if they trace the details? They'll trace it straight back to Mum's account!
It doesn't matter, does it? Because she's dead.
You bastard, David!
Peter, I didn't mean to say that. Really. Look, if we don't get the money, then all this will have been for nothing. That boat's my dream. And Mum's house is yours. We're both risking a lot here.
And I am.
You are a pain in the arse who fucks up everything he touches.
Okay, David. But then I want that account closed.
It will be. Now, I haven't got the account number. Have you got it?
It's at home. I'll have to wait. Rebecca, she won't like that.
David proffers his phone to Peter, and he takes it.
Thank you.
Peter goes outside. As he flips open the phone and presses a button, he mouths a conversation to himself, almost as though practicing. Holding the phone to his ear, he paces round anxiously and talks under his breath. He walks down the path a little, completely oblivious to Mook Lee, who's poised to attack with his cleaver.
Hello. Hiya.
While Peter chats to Rebecca, Tracy has an idea.
Oh, sorry. Are you stressed? Yeah, sorry. I know. Sorry. This is going to sound like a strange request. I need you to get the Mum folder. Oh, no, don't say that. He just forgot, that's all. No, I'm not sticking up for him. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, I know. Sorry. Can I have it, though, please? Thank you.
Tracy prizes off her gag.
You fucking can't!
Peter drops the phone in a pond.
No,
I... Ellie, fucking move now! You fucking bastard!
He fishes it out.
Take me out of this room, you slags! I've had nothing to eat! I am not a fucking animal! Andrew, I knew it was you, you smelly fuck! You are fucking dead!
David, I've dropped the phone in some water downstairs!
I've seen your face, dead cunt! You're dead! You're all dead! Ugly! David and fat fucking Andrew!
Andrew scurries downstairs like a frightened rabbit as David reties the gag. In the kitchen, Peter is having minor hysterics. Downstairs, Andrew and Peter move out of David's way as he thunders down the stairs and paces back and forth like a caged animal. Peter and Andrew exchange anxious looks as David tears off his balaclava and throws it to the floor, his face burning with rage.
I must be the biggest idiot out of all of us. For getting involved with you, and for getting you involved. What are we going to do? Let me see the phone.
Peter hands David the phone, and water seeps out of it.
It's broken.
Fucking
that! Sorry, it was the pond!
David moves up to Andrew, whose chubby face is bursting out of the hole in his balaclava.
How's your phone?
He fumbles in his pocket and hands his phone over.
It's run out of battery.
David puts his fist to his forehead, suppressing his rage.
Okay, have you got a charger?
Yes.
Great, where is it?
In the club.
What the fuck is it doing there?
It's plugged in the wall.
It was a rhetorical question!
He throws the phone to the floor and rubs his eyes.
I'm going to have to go up to that village, aren't I? Use a payphone.
Why do you recognise your voice?
Well, she knows now, doesn't she? So none of that means anything anymore, does it?
I'm not the only one that makes mistakes, David. You think you're so perfect?
Shut up, Peter! For once in your life, shut up and take some fucking responsibility!
With a snarl on his face, David grabs a piece of paper off his brother, who has a bloodstain under his nose like a Hitler moustache.
I take it that that is right.
David storms outside and looks across at Andrew's car. He turns back to the cottage. Inside, Andrew removes his balaclava and nods knowingly at Peter. David stands face to face with Andrew as he fumbles through his pockets. He takes out Andrew's car keys and holds them up to him in a clenched fist.
Block me in, you cunt!
Junyo, sitting in his car with a knife in his hand, watches David in his rearview mirror as he drives away in Andrew's car.
What the fuck? What are you doing? What the fuck are you doing? Hello, your mother, Annie. How many?
Andrew, that's Guy David, and some bored mother.
What do you want us to do? Okay, I send you details now. Mokli, get rid of this fuck.
What does it say?
Ani coming now and he very pissed man.
With the cleaver in his hand, Mokli goes round the car and opens the back door.
Okay, dumb fuck. We
go now.
He drags the battered, bloodied hostage out of the car and into the woods. Andrew's car headlights cut a path through the darkness as David travels along a narrow country road, lighting a cigarette. He pulls up near a red telephone box that's lit up by a lone street lamp.
Arnie. Yes, it's me. Yeah. Yeah, thanks for that. Yeah, you never know when you'll need a tissue. I'll check the account in the morning and I'll call you back. What?
He rubs his brow wearily and turns round.
Fuck.
He's startled by a bald man in a barber jacket glaring at him through the phone box window. He comes out of the phone box to find a sprinkling of villagers staring at him. One elderly lady is wearing curlers and her nightdress.
What the fuck are you all staring at?
Stranger, eh? I seen a few flash cars driving through here tonight. You up at the Barnaby Cottage, ain't you?
What the fuck's it got to do with you?
Now, you make sure you lock your doors. Strangers don't fare well in these parts.
What?
Thorn! Thorn!
The bald man keeps his Rottweiler on a tight lead.
You just don't go wandering. That's my advice to you, my lad.
Thanks. Great.
David walks away. The villagers follow him. He stops and they stop. He turns round and glares at them, then walks on. The villagers follow him again and stop when he stops. He turns back to face them with a thunderous look, then turns and walks towards the car, shaking his head in disbelief. The villagers follow him like zombies. Sitting alone in his car, Chun Yo hears something in the distance. He frowns and gets out of the car, clutching his knife. His black jacket has a large embroidered tiger on the back. He prowls into the woods with moonlight glinting on the blade of his knife. With the knife poised to strike, he stalks through the trees like a hunter.
Mowgli! You finished?
A barn owl with a ghostly white face peers through the darkness from its perch. Mukli's cleaver is embedded in a tree. Chunyo slowly walks towards it with a frown.
What the fuck?
The owl flutters away. Back at the cottage, David's car alarm is going off as he arrives back at the wheel of Andrew's car. He tears across the yard in a panic, looking round anxiously. He slips on the doorstep as he dashes into the cottage.
Shit! Peter!
Andrew's lying motionless on the floor.
Peter!
He rushes into the bedroom but finds nothing, then notices Peter's wrist exerciser on the hallway floor. He hurries back downstairs and picks battered and bloodied Andrew up by the lapels.
Wake up, you fat fuck! Where's that bitch and my brother?
He drops Andrew and rushes outside with a look of despair. He snarls and rushes back in and grabs Andrew off a chair.
I've been gone for less than an hour. What the fuck has been going on?
Stop squeezing. I can't think.
You're not capable of thinking. You're a fucking idiot. What happened?
Ow! Okay, wait. Where's Peter?
That's the whole point. He and your sister have gone missing.
She was hitting me.
I'm gonna get you in a minute.
Wait. I remember. We were sat at the table when she started to bang on the ceiling. So we both went upstairs to see what she wanted. She wanted to use the toilet. I said it was a bad idea, but he said we should allow it. I told him we couldn't trust her, so we went in with her. After she'd done her urine, she said she wanted to wipe herself, and unless we wanted to do it for her, we'd have to untie her. Well, I didn't fancy it, and I don't think your brother did either. So we untied her. But that's when he started to freak out. I don't know why. There was something in the room.
Was it a moth?
Yeah. Well, while we were distracted, she lunged at me, and I fell out with the door. It hurt. She was furious. She grabbed Peter.
In flashback, Peter scrabbles at the floor as he's dragged backwards.
And then she came over and hit me.
He's on his own with her. He better be all right for your fucking sake.
else can go wrong?
What the fuck?
The bloody hostage, wearing masking tape over his mouth, drops to the floor.
Stephen?
Do you know him?
Yes, I saw him this morning. He cuts my hair.
What the fuck's he doing here? Wait. You didn't tell him about this, did you?
No! Oh, yes. And I did.
You really are fucking unbelievable. Who brought you here?
Chinese. Korean?
Mukli Chunyang.
Oh, no.
Fuck. Where are they? Did you see a bald bloke?
No. Don't go out there. You'll die.
Blood oozes out of his mouth as his eyes glaze over. David slowly lets go of the dead hairdresser, and Andrew retches as Stephen's guts spill onto the floor.
Oh, my God. They've cut him open. Is he dead?
What do you think?
If they can do that to him, they could do that to us.
Okay. That's for everything you've ever done. Right, you got here an hour and a half ago, which means that Azani probably knows where we are. He's less than an hour away. Okay, get your arse in gear. We're going to find my brother, grab your sister, and then we're fucking off back to the city. Where's my knife?
He goes to the dresser, but it's not there. Trace is pointing it at Peter.
My face is broken, my jaw, I know it!
Shut your fucking mouth and keep walking.
I've got a hunger. What are you going to do to me?
I can't understand what you're saying.
Why did you ring me?
Because I couldn't move my fat cunt of a stepbrother, and when I finally see my father, he is going to want to torture someone, and that will be you.
Why are you walking in a hitwood? There can be wolves out here, it's all like that. So, God, I'm really complicated right now.
What?
Complicated!
You, I'd better hope that we find a phone soon, or I am going to stick this knife in your balls. Now keep close to me and get a fucking move on.
That's my mother's knife.
He follows her through the dark woods. They reach a wooden gate with a hand-painted sign above it. A brace of pheasants are hanging from the sign.
Keep of land. Oh, obviously some thick cunt lives here.
There's blood on the sign. Tracy climbs over the gate.
Can't climb out with this.
Stop staring at it and get the fuck over it.
There's something in there. There's people of land. And a dead animal.
As Peter clambers over the fence, he drops his wallet without noticing. David grabs an adjustable spanner out of a toolbox in the boot of his car.
We're going into the woods.
He strides away. Andrew looks around furtively and follows him. They take the same route into the woods as the Chinese assassins. Tracy stops as she spots a remote farmhouse in the distance with light blazing from a window. She marches towards the farmhouse, and Peter looks around nervously as he follows her. She and Peter creep through the shadows of the farmyard. They pass an old tractor. There's no sign of life. Tracy heads for a doorway with light spilling out of it. Peter looks around cautiously and follows her in. They're in a passageway that has a rusty, hook-tipped cleaver on the wall.
What? Hello?
She tries the door handle. The door's unlocked.
Right, fuckhead. If you whinge, cry, or do anything to let the owners of this house know that I'm going to kill you, I'll kill you. Got it? A nod of the fucking head will do.
He nods his head meekly and she goes through the door into her kitchen. There's a cream-coloured arga on one side and a table in the middle of the kitchen under a cluster of pans and utensils hanging from a ceiling rack. Tracy grimaces. The place is grubby and untidy. Ramshackle cupboards are stuffed full of tins. She picks up a plate with leftovers on it and turns it upside down. The leftovers are stuck to it. There's a trap door in the floor.
Hello?
Tracy goes out through another door, and Peter hurriedly scampers after her. They wander along a gloomy hallway cluttered with bric-a-brac, the paint peeling off the walls. They come into a living room where there's a fire burning in the hearth and a record's playing on the stereo.
Fucking rubbish.
She sweeps the needle off the record. The walls are plastered with photographs. Some of the photographs are framed family portraits in black and white of a couple with two girls. Others are coloured snaps stuck untidily to the wall.
What the fuck are all these?
They pore over the haphazard collection of photographs. Tracy frowns. Some of the newer looking snaps seem to have had the father's head erased or scratched out. The mother and the girls look glum. Peter shakes his head in disbelief.
No.
I'm going upstairs to see if there's a phone.
I might run away.
You might run away.
She smiles malevolently and strides up to him.
Oh, God, I can't take this anymore! Oh, I can talk. I can talk again.
She kicks him in the groin.
Fucking run now, you cunt.
She marches out as he doubles up on the floor in pain. Smouldering on the hearth behind him is Muckley's leather fingerless glove with a Chinese symbol on it. David and Andrew are making their way through the dark wood. A broken sign nailed to a tree reads, "No trespassing."
Definitely won't be able to go home again. I should have checked that bag for the money. Damn it! I would have seen those tissues.
Andrew, shut up a minute.
What?
Do you know what Muckley's sand looks like?
Yes.
David's found a body strung between two trees by the wrists. It's Muckley with his throat cut.
Shit! Yes, that's him. What's happened?
He's had his throat cut.
Maybe it was Chung Yo Fu. They're always arguing.
You don't get your throat slit over an argument.
Something's not right.
David walks on into the darkness. Andrew, glancing at the strung-out corpse, hurries after him. At the farmhouse, Tracy comes into a dimly lit bedroom that's cluttered with soft toys. She glances round, then goes out into a hallway. Peter staggers out of the living room, painfully clutching his groin. Upstairs, Tracy goes through a door at the end of the narrow hallway and into a bedroom with women's clothes hanging up on doors. Peter explores downstairs, passing a large Christmas tree in the hallway at the foot of the staircase. In the woman's bedroom, Tracy picks up a suitcase and dumps it on the bed. She opens it. Scratched on the lid are the words, "You will never leave me." Peter comes into a dark room and turns on the light. A look of shock hits his battered, bloodied face.
My
Gone!
The room swarming with moths. Peter waves his hands frantically in slow motion like a drowning man. He staggers into the kitchen, clutching his jaw. He takes a bag of peas from the freezer and presses them against his jaw. He holds it close like a child cuddling a teddy, but his contented look melts away when he spots the trap door a few feet in front of him. Upstairs, Tracy sniffs the air as she rifles through the clothes in the case. She traces the smell to a door. In the kitchen, frozen peas are falling to the floor like hailstones. Tracy gags as she slowly edges towards the door and reaches for the handle. Peter squints through his spectacles at the peas spread across the trapdoor. Tracy stops short at the door.
Fucking idiot! What the fuck is the matter with you? Why are the peas all over the floor?
I heard something underneath that trapdoor.
What?
There, underneath!
Peter, clutching the bag of what's left of the peas, cowers as she edges towards the trapdoor with a frown. She kneels down and strains an ear.
There it is. No, don't open it, we'll be killed.
We're in a creepy house in the middle of nowhere. There's a trap door in the kitchen with a weird noise coming from underneath. What the fuck do you think is going to be down there?
She opens the large trap door to reveal some steps. She kneels down and peers beyond them.
See? Nothing. It was probably a fucking rat, which is why only you heard it. Now stop causing a fucking problem or else...
What?
Why are the hands in the freezer?
He slowly turns his head to look at a freezer shelf crammed with human hands.
I think we should go now.
Yeah.
The tip of a machete pokes through the side of her chest, saturating her white top with blood. She drops to the floor, and coming up the steps with the machete is a disfigured farmer in a check shirt and dungarees. His face is pitted and scarred, as if it has been stitched together with scraps of skin, and he's bald except for some strands of fine hair that hang down one side of his head. Peter drops the peas and stays rooted to the spot. He tears off in a panic with the farmer in close pursuit. He tries the front door, but it's locked, so he dashes up the stairs as the farmer smashes the banisters like matchsticks with his machete. Peter shuts himself in the woman's bedroom and puts his back to the door. Keeping his back to the door, he slowly slides to the floor. He spots a key on a nearby dressing table and frantically stretches for it, but it's out of reach. He makes a dash for the key and hurriedly locks the door. Kneeling down, he carefully puts an ear to the door. He slowly draws away, keeping his eyes fixed firmly on the door. The machete bursts through the door and the tip of it hits the bridge of Peter's glasses. The machete is withdrawn and the glasses fall to the floor. He hurriedly puts them back on. As the farmer breaks the door down, Peter opens a first floor window and clings to the window ledge. The farmer lunges at him and Peter falls to the ground. The farmer leans out of the window as Peter limps across the farmyard.
Wait!
Tracy staggers out of the house.
Don't you leave me! Don't you fucking leave me!
The farmer disappears from the upstairs window.
Peter, I'm sorry. And I won't tell me, Dad. I promise you'll be okay.
Why should I believe you?
Because I'm begging you. Please. I don't want to die.
What am I doing? All you've done is hurt me. All the root of me, I must be an idiot.
Just hurry up and get me out of here.
Where's my bloody head?
Hurry up, get a move on.
Peter darts away as the farmer approaches.
You fucking bastard! Get back here now! Get back here, you fucking pussy! Coward! Chicken shit!
The farmer comes up behind Tracy and she turns to face him with a defiant sneer.
What are you looking at, your ugly
He kicks her in the stomach, knocking her over. He sits astride her and slowly raises the machete with both hands. Peter whacks him in the face with a shovel.
Please don't say anything.
He drops the shovel and falls to his knees. Tracy slowly sits up, clutching her bloody wound as he lights a cigarette.
This is the worst night of my life. Not only have I met you, I've stumbled into the only house in the country with someone worse than you.
Shut up, for fuck's sake.
I saved you.
Well, that's your fault, pussy. Please, Peter. Please. I need you. Mug.
I knew it. I'm so gullible. I should have left you. I'd be miles away by now.
She throws him the bloody machete.
What do you want me to do with this?
We've got to kill him.
No, I will not.
Yes, you fucking will. When he wakes up, he's not going to be very happy. We've got to kill him now, before he comes round.
I can't! I don't know what to do!
Just stick it in him, you fucking weed!
Wearing his shattered glasses, he gets up, clutching the machete. She struggles to her feet as he slowly advances on the prone farmer, holding the machete in both hands. He looks at the farmer's grubby hand resting on his chest and makes a half-hearted attempt to raise the machete.
Where?
In his head.
He closes his eyes and feebly lifts the machete.
Today! Oh, give me the fucking thing. If you're too much of a wet shit, I'll do it myself.
Stop calling me names. I'm not like you.
I know that little boy.
I'm not a little boy. I'm probably twice your age just because I can't murder or kill.
The farmer grabs the shovel and slices off the toes on Peter's right foot with it. As Peter reaches out for his foot with bloody hands, the farmer towers over Tracy. The farmer drops Tracy with a headbutt, then lumbers towards Peter with the shovel.
Go on. Fucking do it, you ugly prick. Cut the cunt's head off. Come on, fucking do it. What are you waiting for? You're a fucking man, aren't you? Or are you just a fucking woman like all the fucking others? Come on, I haven't got all day to wait for some ugly prick to kill some scraggy cunt.
The farmer swings the shovel at Tracy. The shovel cuts into her mouth down to her cheekbones, and blood pours from her mouth onto the face of the shovel, lodged in her face. The farmer pushes on the shovel and slices her head in two. Blood pumps out of her body. The farmer swings the shovel like a baseball bat and knocks Peter unconscious. He grabs Tracy's corpse by the ankles and drags it across the yard. He comes back for Peter and drags him by one leg towards a barn. Half of Tracy's head lies on the concrete yard as a light goes on in the barn, throwing out the shadow of a large hanging hook. In shadow, Peter's body is hung from the hook, and the shadow disappears as the light is turned out. The farmer picks up Tracy's gnarled, bloody head and lumbers across the yard with it. In the wood, David strides through the darkness and Andrew waddles after him. The breath pours out of their mouths in the cold night air like smoke from a chimney as they approach the gate with the keep off sign. They climb over the gate and David finds Peter's wallet on the ground.
They've been over this fence.
How do you know that?
Because that whale and baby are his family.
There's a photo in the wallet.
Let's go.
They head towards the farmhouse with light blazing from its downstairs windows.
Can't we stop a moment? I'm really tired.
No, we can't.
I'm not used to walking.
I don't care.
Should we be on the lookout for traps?
Why?
Because we're near a farm. Don't they always use traps?
Andrew steps on a trap, its jagged jaws biting into his plump leg. David pulls at the tightly sprung jaws clamped to Andrew's leg and strains to prise them apart. David lets go of the jaws and Andrew collapses as they embed themselves into his leg. Mist drifts past a bright full moon as they creep across the farmyard. David's brandishing the adjustable spanner and Andrew has an improvised walking stick.
Do you think lives here?
Oh, MacDonald.
Who's that?
Shut up. Keep your eyes peeled and be careful.
We should look inside, see if they're in the house.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Something on the ground catches David's eye. He picks up the tip of Peter's black leather shoe.
What is that?
If I'm not mistaken, it's a piece of my brother's shoe.
Peter's toes drop out of it.
Foot. Oh, fuck me.
What? They cut off his feet. Who's doing this? Have they got Tracy?
Right. Fuck the plan. Fuck the money. I need to find my brother.
What's that?
Door over there.
Don't be long.
With the spanner poised ready to strike, David creeps towards a barn door that's slightly ajar. He moves stealthily into the darkness of the barn.
Peter.
He pockets the spanner and flicks open his Zippo that provides a drop of light in an ocean of darkness.
Peter.
He wanders through the shadows, holding the Zippo like a candle. The light falls upon a cluttered workbench. He picks up a scalpel. He finds a scrapbook and opens it. A press cutting amongst the pages of photos reads, "Farmer in machine accident." Other headlines read, "Farmer disfigured," and "Authorities close accident farm." A photo of the farmer with his family has his face scratched out. The pages are bloodstained, and there's a Polaroid of someone being strangled. He finds a book with a picture of a bride with scratched out eyes on the cover. He opens it and flicks through diary entries.
The children have found a young man tied up in the barn. He had no face. I think he's going to hurt us. We will try to flee tonight. Must stop his coming.
The flame casts flickering light onto his craggy face and he slowly turns round.
What the hell is this place?
He spots something in the shadows and slowly walks towards it. In the yard, leaning on his stick, Andrew squints as he catches sight of something. Each of them moves slowly to investigate their discoveries with a look of horror and disbelief.
Tracy?
Tracy.
On a shelf, David finds Tracy's head, severed at the mouth.
David! David!
Andrew spots her headless body and hobbles after David.
David, somebody's cut off Tracy's head.
I know, I'm looking at it.
Should we get out of here now?
I'm not leaving without Peter.
I found a coat.
He puts it on in the darkness.
I think there's a light in here.
A row of hanging lights come on. Andrew's wearing Chunyo's tiger jacket. David is stunned as he spots something behind Andrew. Andrew slowly turns round and frowns as David moves in for a closer look.
Jesus, mother of fuck.
Rows and rows of shelves are crammed with severed heads and skulls in various stages of decomposition. David looks in horror at the macabre display racked out like jars of sweets in a shop.
Well, Peter's not here, so he may still be alive.
That one moved.
Which one?
The ugly one.
The farmer bursts out of the display and lunges at David, who swings the spanner at him. The disfigured farmer pins David against a post.
Fuck are you?
The farmer throws David out into the yard and grabs a pickaxe off the barn wall. He buries the pickaxe into David's leg. Andrew steps on a rake which hits him in the face. As he staggers around, the farmer grabs the rake and comes up behind him. The farmer hits Andrew on the back of the head with the rake, and they each examine clumps of bloody hair. David's pinned to the ground with a pickaxe. Andrew staggers out of the yard and clambers down a grassy slope, clutching his injured right leg. The farmer grabs the hook-tipped cleaver from the passageway wall and goes after him. Andrew scurries along a dimly lit path between two rows of cowsheds. The farmer, carrying the long-handled cleaver, marches past the grassy slope towards the cowsheds. Andrew, meanwhile, has reached the end of the row of cowsheds and is leaning against a post. He peeks out and glances over his shoulder, but there's no sign of the farmer. As he turns back, the farmer reaches the opposite end of the cowsheds and stands silhouetted with the cleaver outstretched and breath drifting into the air. He disappears behind one of the stalls as Andrew sneaks another peek. Andrew fumbles in his pocket and pulls out his mobile. He looks at the caller display, then wanders into the path between the sheds.
Hello? No. Dad? Is that you? Oh, please come quick. We're on the farm. Tracy's dead and there's a madman after me.
The farmer bursts out of the shadows and buries the cleaver between Andrew's legs, ripping at his soft, fat flesh. As David lies in agony in the yard, Peter comes to in a barn hanging from a hook by his coat. A pool of blood is below his toeless right foot.
Peter!
David! What the hell's going on?
Where are you?
I'm a farmer! A lunatic! He's killed Tracy! I'm hanging on a hook! I'm in too much pain!
Wait.
I'm trying to get free.
David pulls at the pickaxe, but it doesn't budge.
Peter, can you move?
I can't!
I'm stuck. Pinned to the ground, I need your help.
Okay. Wait there!
Okay. I'll wait here.
David smiles exhaustedly as Peter tries to wriggle off the hook. He falls to the floor, grimacing with pain. He grabs a rag and wraps it round the stump of his foot. David's flat on his back, smiling, and can barely lift his head. Peter falls out of the barn.
Okay, David. I'm coming. Don't worry. I'm coming.
He crawls slowly across the yard on his belly like an arthritic tortoise.
Oh, this is taking ages.
Hurry up, for fuck's sake.
He inches closer and closer to his brother. They clasp their bloodied hands together.
I'm here.
Oh, no. You okay?
No. I'm in a lot of pain.
Peter struggles to sit up next to his brother. He looks at the pickaxe embedded in David's leg.
This is probably going to hurt.
David nods. With his hands drenched in blood, Peter grabs the pickaxe and pulls at it. David helps pull as the pickaxe blade slides out of his leg, leaving a gaping, bloody wound. Peter collapses flat on his back next to David, and they look up at the sky.
I've only got half a foot.
I know. Found the other half of it over there.
What did you do with it?
I lost it.
Oh, not to worry. What a clear night. You can actually see the stars.
The stars look like diamonds scattered onto a black cloth.
They're amazing. Peter. I'm sorry.
Oh. Forget about it. I don't think even you could have seen this.
David pulls a piece of paper out of his pocket and offers it to Peter.
What's this?
It's the deed to Mum's house.
Oh. Well, I'm sure we'll both be dead within the hour. Let's share for the rest of our lives.
Sounds like a plan. Mum would have... She'd have liked that.
Yes, it would have done.
Andrew's lying face down on the ground as the farmer rips the clothes off his flabby back. He buries the cleaver into Andrew's back and cuts into his flesh like a butcher. He rips out Andrew's spinal column with his head attached and holds it aloft like a trophy.
Fuck this. I want my boat. I want to sail on it and live the rest of my life. We are not dying here tonight.
Okay.
The blood-stained brothers stagger into the kitchen, David putting his weight on Peter's shoulder.
Have you looked for a phone?
Not properly. I was being chased by a madman.
I'm going to go look for
one. No, shouldn't we just try and get away?
It's taken us 10 minutes to get in here, right? There isn't another house for miles around. Best thing we can do is get help to come in.
All right, what shall I do?
Just wait here, right? The fucking farmer comes back. Just give me a shout, right?
Okay, be careful.
Yeah, you too. Don't do anything stupid.
David staggers on a few steps, then stops.
Peter.
Yes?
About the greenhouse. I'm sorry.
David limps out of the kitchen. Outside in the darkness, the farmer is dragging Andrew's severed head attached to the spinal cord across a field, like a dog on a lead. David hops into a bedroom and finds the suitcase that Tracy opened. He shakes a pillow out of its case. In the kitchen, Peter's anxiously looking out of the window. Upstairs, David ties the torn pillowcase around his leg tightly. He becomes aware of a strong smell coming from the other side of the door that Tracy was about to open. Fear slowly sweeps across Peter's swollen, bloodied face. He spins round and looks at the open trap door and the steps leading down to the darkness. Upstairs, David limps towards the door. The fear slowly rises in Peter's face as he keeps his eyes fixed on the cellar steps. His jaw drops and he slowly edges away. David opens the upstairs door and moves into a dimly lit bedroom. The room is cluttered with wedding paraphernalia and a framed photo of the farmer before his accident and his young wife cutting their wedding cake. Another photo of the newlyweds is splashed with blood. On the walls are mummified face masks with gaping holes for mouth and eyes. Dried blood runs from the eyes like tears. The farmer and his wife are wearing the masks in one of the photos. In another, he holds his distressed wife and another woman in headlocks. As David retches, he notices a severed, decaying hand with a wedding ring hanging from the wall. He staggers back to the adjoining bedroom and goes to the window. He sees the farmer coming into the yard, dragging Andrew's head.
Holy shit.
Peter! He's outside!
Outside? Outside?
Peter turns towards the kitchen window.
I thought you said he was outside!
He's outside.
They see nothing but darkness through the window.
I can't see him!
They spin round and look down the open trap door.
Did you hear that?
Andrew's head lands on the kitchen table.
It's Andrew's bloody head! I can't take this anymore!
We can't get out that way! We have to go out this way!
The farmer's in the doorway, blocking their escape. The farmer sweeps David aside, then slams the pickaxe into the table as Peter rolls out of the way. The farmer blocks a punch from David, then holds him up in the air. David's hurled across the kitchen. Peter punches the farmer and hurts his hand. As the farmer holds Peter in a headlock and waves a knife at him, David tries and fails to release the pickaxe. David scrabbles through a drawer and takes out a photo album.
You want this?
Mad bastard.
David shapes up to tear the farmer's wedding photo.
I swear. You move one more muscle or I'm going to rip this bitch in two.
Okay, Peter. Get away from the trap door. You are going down in the cellar. Right, Peter, start moving that dresser over the trap door. We're going to lock the fucker down there.
Come on, get down! Now! Move it! Move!
The farmer doesn't move, and David starts tearing the photo.
Come on, the fucking pair of you.
Peter's struggling to move the dresser.
Oh, look at these photos.
The farmer pulls the pickaxe from the table. And plunges it into David's chest, grabbing the torn wedding photo off him. As the farmer tries to join the torn photo together on the table, David staggers around like a drunk with the pickaxe sticking out of his chest. Peter is frozen in shock as David's eyes become glassy.
No! David! No, 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 David!
Peter strokes his dead brother's head, then notices a coiled rope hanging on the wall.
Bastard! You killed my brother!
He grabs the rope and jumps on the farmer's back to garrote him. Peter clings to his back like a monkey. The farmer squeezes Peter's injured foot and throws him off. Peter falls through the trapdoor and it closes behind him. He takes the rope with him and he pulls at it through a gap in the trapdoor, gradually pulling the farmer down by his neck. The farmer strains to reach the dresser, and it falls on top of him. Peter pulls the rope tighter and tighter as the farmer struggles under the weight of the dresser. The farmer thrashes around like an animal caught in a trap. Wearing a wedding ring, his hand slowly goes limp. Strips of light break through the gaps in the trap door, but it's blocked by the weight of the farmer and the dresser. Peter limps down the steps, lighting the Zippo as he struggles along a narrow passageway. The Zippo goes out and he's stranded in the darkness. He desperately tries to relight it. He relights it. The farmer's wife and daughter are behind him.
Oh, you must be joking.
The light goes out as they lunge at him. Written and directed by Paul Andrew Williams. Produced by Ken Marshall. Produced by Martin Pope. Executive producer, Steve Christian. Director of photography, Christopher Ross. Editor, Tom Hemmings. Music composed by Laura Rossi. Production designer, Crispian Salas. Makeup and hair designer, Jacqueline Fowler. Costume designer, Marianne Argatoft. Co-producer, Julia Valentine. Casting Director, Tanya Polentaruti, CDG. Cast in order of appearance. David, Andy Serkis. Peter, Rhys Shearsmith. Tracy, Jennifer Ellison. Andrew, Stephen O'Donnell. Bouncer, James Bierman. Club Receptionist, Kat Meacher. Man in Suit, Danny Nussbaum. Mook Lee San, Logan Wong. Chun Yo Fu, Jonathan Chan Pensley. Stephen, Simon Schatzberger. Villager with Dog, Doug Bradley. The Farmer, David Legino. Farmer's Wife, Katie Murphy. Farmer's Daughter 1, Georgia Groom. Farmer's Daughter 2, Eden Watson. Music. Freaks Make the World Go Round. Written by Paul Osborne and Adam Whittaker. Performed by Roger. Grieg, Peer Gynt Suite No. 1, Morning. Performed by the Malmo Symphony Orchestra. Saint-Saëns, Carnival of the Animals, Aquarium. Performed by the Czechoslovakian Radio Symphony Orchestra. Beethoven, 2, Molto Vivace. Symphony No. 9 in D minor, Op. 125, Choral. Performed by Berliner Philharmonica. Happy, Bell Jones Jr. Performed by William Bell. Kill, Kill, Kill. Performed by J. Edgar Hoover and the Body Removers. Written by Tarquil Pagdin. and Adam Mark Whittaker. Filmed entirely on location in the Isle of Man and Yorkshire. The events, characters and firms depicted in this motion picture are fictitious. Any similarity to actual persons, living or dead, or to actual events is purely coincidental. Ownership of this motion picture is protected by copyright and other applicable laws, and any unauthorised duplication or distribution or exhibition of this motion picture could result in criminal prosecution as well as civil liability. Made with the support of the National Lottery through the UK Film Council Premier Fund and Development Fund. Copyright Steel Mill Yorkshire Limited, UK Film Council. All rights reserved. Audio description produced by IMS. Voiced by Michael Woodford. A tranquil morning in the British countryside. A black BMW four-wheel drive glides towards the farm. The registration plate is ARN1E. Three heavies get out, and one of them opens the back door. A pair of feet in designer black leather shoes hits the concrete and strides towards the farm. The owner of the shoes is dressed in black and wearing shades. He's in his 50s and has a shaven head and a mean face. The farmer runs out of the house towards him, swinging a pickaxe. The picture fades to black, and a caption reads, FIN, followed by a question mark.